The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Welcome back.
Lord knows they'll try.
Top of the second hour of today's National Intel Report, this Friday, July 20th, 2018. Again, Chris Hinckley sitting in for John Stadmiller. I am the regular host of Road Warrior Radio here on Republic Broadcasting. And I really do mean, you know, I said I might become a one-trick pony, maybe a 5 or 6 one-trick pony. But what I meant by that was I think everyone should read, study up on who James Otis was, and specifically everyone should read what John Adams wrote about James Otis and also the revolution. There is that, you know, that bright gleaming mile marker, you know, the reminder of John Adams' letter to Hezekiah Niles, that in similar fashion is a very condensed history lesson on what it means to be uniquely American. What is uniquely American? What does it mean to be uniquely American, I would say? And out of this spirit, out of this sentiment, was born these legendary documents. Again, John Adams speaking of James Otis. What did he say? Skipping ahead to the end of his letter to William Tudor, June 1, 1818, that I was reading from. In the first hour, John Adams wrote, "I sincerely believe Mr. Otis to have been the earliest and the principal founder of one of the greatest political revolutions that ever occurred among men. It seems to me important, of some importance, that his name and character should not be forgotten." And in his letter to Hezekiah Niles, February 13, 1818, John Adams wrote, remember, we've all heard this quote, what do we mean by the American Revolution? Do we mean the American War? The revolution was effected before the war commenced. The revolution was in the minds and the hearts of the people. And he said this radical change in the principles, opinions, sentiments, and affections of the people was the real American Revolution. And then he wrote, "By what means this great and important alteration in the religious, moral, and political and social character of the people of 13 colonies, all distinct, unconnected, and independent of each other, was begun, pursued, and accomplished? It is surely interesting to humanity to investigate and perpetuate to posterity." Have we done that? It's the internet age. This is an era of unprecedented openness and transparency. How many of us have read John Adams' letter to Hezekiah Niles and committed the salient points to memory? How many of us have embarked on this quest, this laborious but certainly interesting and amusing task that he referred to? And it's a rhetorical question, obviously. Anyway, continuing, he wrote, "To this end, it is greatly to be desired that young gentlemen of letters in all the states, especially the 13 original states, would undertake the laborious but certainly interesting and amusing task of searching and collecting all the records, pamphlets, newspapers, and even handbills, which in any way contributed to change the temper and views of the people and compose them into an independent nation. And then he goes on to reiterate how unique an accomplishment this is. He said, the complete accomplishment of it in so short a time and by such simple means was perhaps a singular example in the history of mankind. 13 clocks were made to strike together a perfection of mechanism which no artist had ever before effected. The means and measures are the proper objects of investigation. These may be of use to posterity, not only in this nation, but in South America and all other countries. Do we hear? This produced in 1716-61, you know, those are some specifics. I'll get to in a little bit. Anyway, that's what he wrote. Are we doing that? And I say that's what we should be doing in America right now, reading what John Adams wrote about this. Start with his letter to Hezekiah Niles. Start with his letter to William Tudor, two of them. One in to William Tudor, one June 1, 1818, and the second June 9, 1818. Just start there. Three little letters. And then see where that takes you in your investigation of folks like James Otis, for example. Anyway, back to the phones we go. Betty in North Carolina, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Thank you, Chris, for taking my call. I may you be bet. A little off your topic. I
Quite
was
all
listening
right.
to CorbettReport.com, a video called 9/11-The Conspiracy Theory. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Yes, you are?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That is verification that there are conspirators, but nobody has gone to jail. And yeah. I'm wondering, I've heard some broadcasts on this station where they talked about a great many indictments that were on record, but nothing has become of them. Do you know if any of those indictments are tied into that 9/11?
I don't know. Couldn't say specifically.
Okay, well, that was my question, and I thank you for all you do.
You're welcome. So the video that you're watching, it's the little... it's the little short one, right? It's like 5 minutes or something?
5 minutes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I love those when James does that. And that one was published, that was on the 10-year anniversary when he was asking the question, hey, if we haven't figured something out now, it's time to figure something out and do something about what happened or, you know, maybe, and I think it was a very sobering message back then, but also the same time that video was published on the 10-year anniversary of 9/11, 2011. So
thank you, Chris. I had one last idea that came up into my mind while you were talking. So far as an indictment goes on anybody in this case, would the indictment have to go before a grand jury in New York City where the offense was committed? And is it a county that the sheriff would be involved with?
That's a good question. I don't think that I am a subject matter expert, but in my opinion, you know, it would depend on who you ask. And I think that, you know, I mean, obviously, I think two things. First of all, to answer your question specifically, if it's a federal grand jury, it's not a county deal. You know,
even
jurisdiction is... Pardon?
Even though the offense occurred there?
Yeah, I'm not sure how you establish jurisdiction in that case.
Okay.
So that's the first issue.
Thank you.
You bet. And the second thing that I would say, you know, I mentioned the Brett Kavanaugh story earlier, which kind of... Basically, this is why I'm talking about the John Adams stuff, because if people's minds are not, You know, it's kind of like being tried before a jury of your peers. I think that's a relative statement. I'm not sure I could find a jury of my peers, you know, unless I could reach out farther than a county. You know what I mean? I don't think you could find 12 people I would consider my peers, so to speak. And so that, you know, there's a bigger problem. Brett Kavanaugh, representing the sort of hubris, you know, with this idea that warrantless data collection is entirely consistent with the Fourth Amendment. You know, if the judiciary has been hijacked like it has for 100 years, when guys like William Willoughby wrote Principles of Judicial Administration and Congress passed the Administrative Procedure Act, formalizing what was basically treasonable usurpation, that to me seems something, an issue that we have to step back and address in people's thinking. We don't understand these issues properly, and our minds have been messed with in a variety of ways to prevent us from thinking critically about those issues. We play that clip of... Pardon?
Can you give me a date for that happening?
Well, as far as the... let's see. We play the Alfalfa Bill Murray clip from time to time. We should probably, maybe we'll play that. I'll throw that up. But he, Oklahoma's ninth governor, Alfalfa Bill Murray, back in, what was it, the 30s?
Okay.
He was, yeah, back in 1934, he was talking about this issue, a corrupt judiciary. Mm-hmm. And so basically, dates along the way, there are several, you know. I would probably point to, most notably, I'd probably point to R.J. Pristrito's article from 2007 as a jumping off point more than a specific date, because conceptually I think he does a good job of spelling it out, and he also refers to Gary Lawson's Rise and Rise of the Administrative State, which was published in the Harvard Law Review back in 1994 or 96. Anyway,
thank you.
R.J. Pristrito's piece, The Birth of the Administrative State, Where It Came From and What It Means for Limited Government, is a great jumping off point. And in simple terms, basically what happened at the turn of the 20th century, it was part of concepts and things, you know, Fabian socialist guys, you know, roundtable think tanky types before there were think tanks, there were the roundtables, talking about how they could, you know, rule the world basically through councils and committees. And it's ironic that the translation of the word Soviet is council or committee. So that's fun. But basically, they were, you know, talking about having the philosopher kings, the experts, the technocrats tell people, you know, well, we're the experts, so we'll handle this. And now we've come to a point in this society where people basically kind of hand over their sovereignty, their independence and everything, and capitulate and acquiesce because they've come under sort of mind, Jedi mind trick, to believing that that technocrats somehow have more of a fiduciary interest in their well-being than they have themselves, which is why I started out the way I did in the first hour when we played the Reagan clip from 1964 on the Goldwater presidential campaign trail and his what's called a time for choosing speech. Anyway, more than a date, I would say a concept, you know, a few important points along the way. Woodrow Wilson's The New Freedom? a call for the emancipation of the generous energies of a people. So he wrote some interesting stuff in that book. I think it was published in 1913. He was the guy who wrote in his book, this is an interesting thing to write, starting on page 13, he wrote, "Since I entered politics, I have chiefly had men's views confided to me in, privately. Some of the biggest men in the United States in the field of commerce and manufacture are afraid of somebody, are afraid of something. They know that that there is a power somewhere so organized, so subtle, so watchful, so interlocked, so complete, so pervasive that they had better not speak above their breath when they speak in condemnation of it." It's an interesting thing for a president to write.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Yep.
So it's that sort of – and he was writing about the technocratic, you know, that America – the technocratic ideal that America would be ruled by experts someday soon. And you see it fast forward 100 years. Parag Khanna wrote a book. A guy named Parag Khanna. Technocracy in America. Rise of the Info State. And that's basically what he proposed. You know what? Maybe there are too many people. It's too messy, like Alan Watt has been saying for years. They think that's too messy. What if – this is what Parag Khanna wrote. People can go to his website, Parag Khanna. paragkhanna.com. You can find the little book deal, Technocracy in America, Rise of the Info State. This is what influential guys like him say. The idea, he writes, American democracy just isn't good enough anymore. Well, we haven't, I don't know about this concept of democracy, but a constitutional republic is what we were given if we can keep it. A costly election has done more to divide American society than unite it. That's not true. The CIA and color revolution has, though. And democracy itself is plummeting. Well, I say good. Down with democracy. A democratic government is not a good thing. The founders were outspoken about that. But there are better systems out there. Oh, really? And America would be wise to learn from them. In this provocative manifesto, globalization scholar, yikes, Parag Khanna tours cutting-edge nations from Switzerland and Singapore. We want to be like Singapore? Wow. To reveal the inner workings that allow them, that lead the way, in managing, the volatility of a fast-changing world while delivering superior welfare and prosperity for their citizens. Government's supposed to do that? I don't think so. But here's the punchline. He writes, the ideal form of government, according to Parag Khanna, for the complex 21st century is what Khanna calls a direct technocracy, one led by experts but perpetually consulting the people through a combination of democracy and data. From a seven-member presidency and a restructured cabinet to replace the Senate with an assembly of governors, technocracy in America is full of sensible proposals that have been proven to work in the world's most successful societies. Right. Anyway, so a seven-member presidency and a restructured cabinet. So just, you know, 10 guys or whatever should lead the whole country. That'll be great. And as far as the complexity issue is concerned, I agree with Larry McDonald's sentiments when he wrote back in the 70s, we hold these truths a reverent review of the U.S. Constitution. That was back in 1976. He wrote, the complexity of social organization does not change. Our technologically sophisticated industrial society is more complex than the agrarian society of America in the 18th century. In this regard, that was a simpler world, quote unquote. But the complexities of politics here meaning the science of governing, do not change much. The basic political problems confronting the framers of the Constitution were as complex as our political problems today, perhaps more so because they were striking off into the dangerous unknown, whereas all we need to do is return to the fine highway we were once on. And technocrats will try to convince us otherwise, obviously, so that they can be technocrats. But I'll mention a few specific points along the way that I think are relevant and we'll I don't know. Maybe they'll answer your question, hopefully. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back. You bet. Thanks, Betty.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
I feel that I should uphold the power of the state. I feel also that the salvation of this country depends upon returning to constitutional government.
Serving from 1931 to 1935, Governor Alfalfa Bill Murray was perhaps the most colorful governor of the state of Oklahoma.
And a despotism by judicial control is as bad on the liberties of the people as a military despotism.
Murray was a strong leader for Oklahoma. He was big on agriculture, presided over the state constitutional convention, and even ran for president in 1932. Alfalfa Bill Murray, Oklahoma's ninth governor.
Interesting stuff. Alfalfa Bill Murray, Oklahoma's ninth governor. That was April 21st, 1934, the clip that you heard there. And you heard him say it, a judicial despotism by judicial control is as bad on the liberties of the people as a military despotism. Wow. Who talks like that these days? I feel also that, what did he say? The what of this country depends on upon returning to constitutional government? I feel that I should uphold the power of the state. I feel also that the salvation of this country, that's what it was, the salvation of this country depends upon returning to constitutional government. The salvation of this country. Who talks about that? A despotism by judicial control is as bad on the liberties of the people as a military despotism. And so that really sort of gets to the heart of my answer to Betty's question about a specific date on judicial usurpation. It's interesting. There are several pivotal moments and, arguably some important dates, but it's a conceptual shift away from the constitution of representative government with, you know, separation of powers and checks and balances to a, you know, toward this technocratic model of rule by experts. And that's where we are now. We ought to play the clip of Peter Thiel in his conversations with Tyler's conversation with Tyler Cohen at Mercatus Center over at George Mason University. Maybe we'll play that clip in the next segment because I think it's important. Peter Thiel is a polymath who is, you know, Bilderberg Steering Committee member. I mean, he's a powerful, influential, very brilliant guy and a Ron Paul supporter for those, you know, who don't know, which is a very sort of interesting mix of stuff I always like to mention. You know, the Palantir guy is a Ron Paul supporter. So that's interesting. Anyway, what he said in his conversation with Tyler Cohen in this context was remarkable. It was an astonishing admission, I would call it. And he was absolutely right. So I won't say. I'll find that clip and we'll play it in the next segment. But what happened over the course of the 20th century was a shift away from individual liberty and personal freedom toward collectivist rule by technocracy. And so, you know, speaking of W's call earlier, a couple of things before I forget, some housekeeping. You know, speaking of, you know, his point about the server stuff is absolutely spot on. Why was the hardware never properly investigated? Why were these fairy tales, as he put it, which I think is a great word, why were they never properly vetted? The hardware is where you start. And why did the Secretary of State have skiff in her basement? Unsecured data, you know, Chinese did blah, 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 whatever. Nah, that's all misdirection. I think, like I said, I think it's a lot of limited hangouts to create controversy, distraction, to balkanize people, and also to do what W was talking about, the strategy that I, you know, read from Ralph Epperson's The Unseen Hand. That's, you know, what it's all about, basically. More control, more tyrannical, authoritarian, totalitarian sort of control. Anyway, but in as far as the Russian nonsense is concerned, and it is nonsense, three things, maybe four. Before I forget the fourth, that's what it was. So I'll mention the 3+1 on the other side of the break, and we'll go to the phones too. We'll go back to the phones. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party. And the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
I'm getting older and noticing that my body just doesn't work as well as it used to. So I like to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. Recently, I started having a nagging bicep pain and it got so bad I couldn't even lift the weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in veins and arteries that may cause blockages. You know, after just 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone and now I'm back in the gym full strength. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim has superior oral chelation action that helps promote cardiovascular health. So to learn more, go to angioprim.com. That's A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M.com. Or talk to a trained consultant. Call Angioprim toll-free at 877-882-7221. You'll feel better with more energy. Call 877-882-7221 or go to the website angioprim.com.
When it gets cold outside and you got nobody to love, you'll understand what I mean when I say there's no way we're gonna give up. Like a little girl cries in the face of a monster that lives in her dreams. And is there anyone out there? Cause it's getting harder and harder to breathe. Is there anyone out there? Cause it's getting harder and harder.
Welcome back. Bottom of the second hour of today's National Intel Report. Again, I'm your guest host, Chris Hinckley. And before we go back to the phones, this is important stuff. Betty's question is no small question. The transition from a constitutional republic to a technocratic regime, basically, and the wiring together of the three duly constituted branches into the fourth branch. And that's what it is. I mean, that's what Senator Pat McCarran called it on the Senate floor in 1946 as Congress was passing the Administrative Procedure Act. So I'm going to take a couple of minutes real quick to explain some of this, and then we'll go back to the phone. So I hope folks don't mind. But McCarran, Senate Judiciary Chairman Senator Pat McCarran, said on the Senate floor in 1946 as Congress passed the Administrative Procedure Act, "We have set up a fourth order in the tripartite plan of government, What? Which was initiated by the founding fathers of our democracy. And there's that stupid word democracy again. But he said they set up the – and this is from the Congressional Record. You can find this in the Congressional Record today. He said they set up the executive, the legislative, and the judicial branches. But since that time, we have set up a fourth dimension, if I may so term it, which is now popularly known as administrative in nature. So we have the legislative, the executive, the judicial, and the administrative. I mean, are we supposed to take him literally? Because that's weird, right? We don't learn. You can go to Justia.com, the law, the legal resource, and find this information there, though. You know, the administrative fourth branch. Why don't kids learn about that? And so I mentioned R.J. Pistrito's piece, The Birth of the Administrative State, where it came from and what it means for limited government. I won't read from it. I usually do. But I would encourage folks to read it. Because basically he details some of the most important moments in that timeline and the trends toward what has happened now, where this administrative state, fourth branch, so-called, literally wires together powers and functions from the three duly constituted branches. And just, I guess, a brief excerpt. R.J. Pistrito cites Gary Lawson's piece, The Rise and Rise of the Administrative State. So here's an excerpt. As Lawson explains from R.J. Pistrito's piece, as Lawson – and again, Gary Lawson's piece was published in the Harvard Law Review. This is not a conspiracy blog. It's the Harvard Law Review. And for that matter – speaking of that piece, Gary Lawson, his opening sentence really says it all in his piece. Again, that was published in the Harvard Law Review in 1994. He wrote, "The post-New Deal administrative state is unconstitutional, and its validation by the legal system amounts to nothing less than a bloodless constitutional revolution." Those are strong words. Who talks about that? Who talks like that? So R.J. Pistrito wrote, as Lawson explains, quote, "The destruction of this principle of separation of powers is perhaps the crowning jewel of the modern administrative revolution. Administrative agencies." And speaking of those agencies, again, back to Senator Pat McCarran. What did he say? Again, passing the Administrative Procedure Act, he said, Senate Bill 7, which became the Administrative Procedure Act, the purpose of which is to, well, he said, the Senate Bill 7 is a bill of rights for the hundreds of thousands of Americans whose affairs are controlled in one way or another by agencies of the federal government. I ask you, today in America, what touches the citizen? Supreme Court, Congress, the White House, or DHS, CPS, DSHS, IRS, SSA, TSA, agencies of the federal government. What is your Bill of Rights, America? I've been in court and heard magistrates say, or heard public defenders say, Your Honor, while she is willing, she is adamant about preserving her constitutional right to a speedy trial, she is willing to waive her statutory right to a speedy trial. What does that mean? So Pistrito wrote, quoting Lawson, administrative agencies routinely combine all three governmental functions in the same body and even in the same people within that body. Think about that. Then go read the Federal Register. His example here is the Federal Trade Commission. I think this begs mentioning. So here it is. Gary Lawson writes, the commission, FTC, Federal Trade Commission, the commission promulgates substantive rules of conduct. The commission then considers whether – and this is emblematic. This is customary for all agencies, federal agencies. The commission promulgates substantive rules of conduct. The commission then considers whether to authorize investigations into whether the commission's rules have been violated. If the commission authorizes an investigation, the investigation is conducted by the commission, which reports its findings to the commission. Does this sound American to you? If the commission thinks that the commission's findings warrant an enforcement action, the commission issues a complaint. Guess who? The commission's complaint that a commission rule has been violated is then prosecuted by the commission and adjudicated by the commission. The commission adjudication can either take place before the full commission or before a semi-autonomous administrative law judge. If the commission chooses to adjudicate before an administrative law judge rather than before before the commission, and the decision is adverse to the commission can appeal to the commission. Doesn't that sound like a rigged game, a fixed system, a fixed rigged game? And so then, concluding with this excerpt, R.J. Pastrana writes, the FTC is a particularly apt example since it was the quasi-legislative and quasi-judicial character of the FTC that was upheld in 1935 in a landmark Supreme Court case of Humphrey's executor versus United States. First time that the court so clearly acknowledged that agencies technically within the executive branch, but not necessarily, they call it a quasi anyway, could exercise substantially non-executive functions. In other words, legislative and judicial. Making laws, enforcing laws, and interpreting laws. Agencies do. This is categorically un-American, as I understand it. So the three plus one things, real quick, speaking of Russia and the administrative hijinks, pun intended. When the Russia interference nonsense broke out originally, Nina Agrawal wrote a piece in the LA Times. It's always the one that comes to my mind. The U.S. is no stranger to interfering in the elections of other countries. CIA has accused Russia of meddling in the 2016 U.S. election through hacking, blah, blah, blah. But she points to Dov Levin's research at Carnegie Mellon University and points out that the CIA, namely, has interfered in at least and tried to rig and change elections at least 81 times between 1946 and 2000. At least 81 times. Not total, but at least. Then there was the Yahoo News story that I always point to. Russian hackers. Oh, really? Russian hackers? You mean like those that Obama, the Comey Obama FBI courted? Yahoo News. Remember the 500 million email user accounts that were breached? Well, there was the Yahoo News story, March 15, 2017, behind the hack on Yahoo, Russian agents who had been courted by the FBI. If you haven't read that story, read it. And I always mention, speaking of hacking, the weird May 29, 2009 interview that Warren Olney, who hosts To The Point on NPR, KCRW actually, had. It was the title of the broadcast was Another Czar at the Obama White House. It was the day that Obama, Friday, May 29, 2009, the day the Obama White House announced their cybersecurity initiative. But he interviewed four of the top cybersecurity experts in the world, guy Warren Olney, who no one's ever heard of, and John Arquilla was one of those experts, Rand Corporation, author of The Advent of Net War. You know, before the internet was the internet, John Arquilla and his co-author of The Advent of Net War over at Rand Corporation were running around telling the world, oh my goodness, it's going to give rise to headless terror networks. And anyway, John Arquilla said, I think the biggest problem that we have is that we have a Maginot Line mentality. We believe in things like firewalls. And my master hacker friends say there are no such things as firewalls. Right before that, I think it was Tom Kellerman who was talking about these defectors from former Soviet bloc intelligence agencies who were hacking banks and things like that. And the point is, if you listen to that interview, you come away with a pretty clear understanding, as long as you are not bound by the superstitions and taboos of today, that there are no sides, and it's all same team when it comes to that level of hacking. So that's interesting. And then last but not least, the plus one is Umer Haque's article earlier this week, July 16th, titled How Russia Conquered America Without Firing a Bullet. What happens when a society uses democracy to undo its own sovereignty? Which reminds me of that piece that G. Edward Griffin has had for a million years over at Freedom Force International, titled The Chasm, The Future is Calling, Part 1. You can find it over there at freedomforceinternational.org. And he tells the story about interviewing Norman Dodd. In 1982, I met Norman Dodd in his home state of Virginia, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, the story of, you know, creating a comfortable merger with the Soviet Union is the punchline of that. And you can read it for yourself. And J. Edward Griffin interviewed Norman Dodd, the director of research for the Rees Committee back in the 50s. And if you're not familiar with the Rees Committee, definitely need to understand what was going on there. But a couple of pivotal moments, and then we'll go to the phones. Maybe just one for now. When there was a case, 1875, Farmers and Mechanics Bank versus Deering, 91 U.S. 29. And there was this peculiar phrase that came out of it, 1875. And it was so important a point that Justice Brandeis quoted it in 1919. In United States versus Babcock, 250 U.S. 328. And the phrase is, when the state creates rights in individuals against itself, it is not bound to provide a remedy in the courts, and it may withhold all remedy, or it may provide an administrative remedy and make it exclusive, however mistaken its exercise. That's weird. So basically the point is, when people decide to partake in the delicious gifts of socialism, the state giving things that the state doesn't have permission or authority to give from some magical imaginary balance sheet it doesn't have, then the only rule is that there are no rules, and the state can change the rules at any time. That's what happens. That's sleight of hand. And it was so important a phrase that Justice Brandeis quoted it in 1919 in United States versus Babcock. You fast forward, you see evidence of it. 1942, Justice Jackson's opinion in Wickard versus Filburn, where Roscoe Filburn had his, you know, the government said, it doesn't matter where you grow wheat, we own it all because of your, you know, administrative, your Agricultural Adjustment Act participation. So you're contracting with agencies, and therefore we own it all. But the real shift, the most notable shift in this sort of context was in the 1938 Erie Railroad versus Tompkins case, 304 U.S. 64, when the Supreme Court overturned essentially the what was it? It's 1842, right? Swift versus Tyson, which established the federal general common law as the law of the land, basically. So Erie Railroad overturned that decision, where the Supreme Court determined or declared that there is now no federal general common law. So then what is the prevailing law of the land? Now we're moving into – you'll notice that a corresponding rise in administrative law in law school now is pretty much all they teach, administrative law, which is not – it's basically business law. And if you understand how this works, we're all subject to public policy now. It's corporate rules. That's all it is. Hopefully that makes sense. And there are some dates in there a little bit. Those are important points. There are others along the way, but hopefully that makes sense and gives, I don't know, a fairly cogent answer to Betty's question. And we've been dealing with it for a long time. We played the alfalfa bill clip. I really wish that we could play a little bit of that Peter Thiel clip. Can we maybe skip forward? I wanted to play the whole answer to the kid's question, but is there a chance we could play like can we play from, say, 59:30, around there, 59 minutes, 30 seconds. This is Peter Thiel's conversation with Tyler Cohen at George Mason University, Mercatus Center, back on April, I think it was, March 30th or something like that, 2015. Anyway, this is what Peter Thiel said about the situation. What form of government do we have in America today? This is what he said.
Superseded by these very unelected agencies of one sort or another, which really drive most of the decision making, and so I think calling our society a democracy, whatever may be good or bad about democracy, is very, very deeply misleading. We're not a republic, we're not a constitutional republic. We're actually sort of a state that's elected by these that's dominated by these very unelected technocratic agencies. And the very difficult political question is, how can you get an advanced technological society to function in any way that's, you know, more Republican or more democratic at all? And not at all sure how that is. But I think the challenge is that a lot
there
of these agencies
go.
Have.
That's Peter Thiel, presidential advisor, Bilderberg steering committee member, Palantir guy who, you know, polymath who says, I don't know how you do that at all. This is the situation we're in. I think you create a shift in people's thinking away from a one-button society that has to have the latest, greatest device into a thinking people that's probably a lot more Luddite than one-button society, if you know what I mean. Hopefully all that makes sense. I apologize for the delay. Back to the phones. Chris in Las Vegas, thanks for your patience. Welcome.
Wow, you cut me pretty short there, but I really
I'm sorry, man.
Oh, and Dane noticed. No, I'm not complaining. I'm just really enjoying what you're bringing to the table, because it's a little discussed matter that we all need to be aware of in this country to realize what's taking place. But if we go back and look, Woodrow Wilson's administration, so-called, we remember that Colonel Edwin Mandel Hauser and his Philip Drew administrator, the wet dream of the administrative statist elitist, having rule over all subjects, the slaves, the serfs, the so-called citizens that they call citizens, which are really slaves of the city, subjects there too, under the 14th so-called amendment, unlawfully not passed, but deemed passed by Seward. These things that have happened to America have been the demise. And you're talking about judicial tyranny. It's spoken of in Downs versus Bidwell, Adderley versus Georgia, it's absolutely, they talk about the tyranny of the judiciary, and this is where we're at today. This bar, unification of all separated powers, offices of government, the executive, the legislative, and the judicial, all under the guise of the bar, which is basically seize control of our government, the senior executive services, the Western division of Serco and Britain and other places around the globe, these administrators, these managers, have become a lawless entity into themselves, and we see it manifested day in and day out in these antics and goings-on, this communist show trial portrayed as the examination of Peter Strzok, the FISA abuse, which is the administrative state, because FISA courts are actually star chambers, inquisitorials, Spanish Inquisition.
Exactly. It's ministerial, inquisitorial, feudal stuff, which is interesting because John Adams wrote in his dissertation on the canon and feudal law, there's this seems to be a settled design on foot to enslave all America by reinstituting the canon and feudal law. And here we are.
Yeah.
And
exactly
it seems
right.
Like
that's Betty's question, who would have jurisdiction? That's a perfect application for the FISA courts if they were run legitimately, because this is foreign and domestic terrorism by these agents of the out-of-control agencies who have found themselves to be lawless and above the law.
Yep, Absolutely. And it is, terrorism is not a sensational term for those who don't know.
No, no.
Look it up. You'll be shocked.
Terrorism is absolutely what the government does to the people.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
But sorry I couldn't put more cogent thoughts together for you, Chris, but I always enjoy your insightful, well-studied. I always thought James Otis, I thought that was the guy that developed the elevators, for Christ's sakes. I never knew anything. And I loved Alfalfa Bill Murray from Oklahoma, my home state.
Isn't that great? And Eustace Mullins talked Alfalfa Bill Murray. We need to be reminded of that stuff more often.
I never heard of him in Oklahoma, but I'm going to look up more about him. You can bet on that. Thank you so much, Chris. Appreciate your contributions.
You bet. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Thanks for the reminders, too, on the cases. That's great. Back to the phones. Ed in Utah, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hello, Chris.
Hi, Ed.
Yeah, hi. Listen, in all due respect, I realize that the history of a lot of this is important and the names and whatnot, but right now, it's not like these details you're bringing out, a lot of us have read them. Chris has read them there in Las Vegas and what have you. But what we're dealing with right now is, if you will, the culmination of all those things that went by us. And there were those trying to warn. The early John Birch Society had some good people in it at one point, and they were trying to blow the whistle on this, Chris, and what have you. But we are in a stage now. It's almost like your take, and you can correct me. It's like society shifted this way. Influence came here. Let's talk about the actors, the actual people, the many people allied with Israel and these people that their ancestral homeland, which ironically is Russia, and these people that deal with both Russia and still haven't got over the fact that they lost control of the old Soviet Union. And the vitriol against Russia right now and against Trump for befriending Vladimir Putin, who is a nationalist, is remarkable in that they never had the vitriol against Russia when it was under the Soviet communist Marxist Jewish control. But look at their anger now.
Caitlin Johnstone, I think it is, who – I think Caitlin Johnstone had a comment recently about that. She said, you didn't hear about Russia before and now you're hearing, and you didn't care before and now suddenly you do, and – guess what? That's on purpose. So,
It's because these people, that's right, they're allied with them. They are, in some cases, blood-related. Look at Chertoff that took over the Homeland Security. He's a son of a Russian rabbi. That's what he is.
Well,
so the ties are there.
Yes. Can I
is what I'm saying.
Just speak
and we're
to
here
that
now.
Real quick?
We have Donald Trump trying to befriend a nationalist who's trying to put them down over there, like I do believe he's trying to put them down over here in his anti-globalist rhetoric.
I wouldn't entirely agree, but I respect your position on that. My point is only this. It's simply this. That all is important, but in my opinion, it's secondary. And it's secondary for this reason, because if for right now, for all practical purposes, if someone said, what do we do? If we had a reset right now, who knows how representative government in a constitutional republic is supposed to function? We need to understand that. And studying what John Adams said to study gets us back there really quickly.
Chris,
like
we have evil
originally.
Actors coming at our throat. And we have
and
an
guess
actor
what?
There,
we did back
as
then,
far
too.
As he might be, yes,
no
as far
different
as he might
than,
be, Donald Trump seems to right. be taking a fist to them. Yeah.
I respect
that's all
your
we got
position.
To slow it down.
Yeah.
I
respectfully disagree, but I respect your position, though. Thanks, folks. Have a great weekend.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. This product is superb. I have been taking it for about a year now, and I can feel my cardiovascular system run like a Swiss watch. I definitely recommend this product for anyone that has high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and heart palpitations. A+. It's potent, but it works. I have been waking up for the past 3 years with numb hands, and a week into using Extendivite, my numb hands seem to have cleared up. My circulation was off, and now it's back on track. So I'm happy. I feel so energized, and I have my husband on it now. My mother-in-law has cholesterol problems, so I bought her a bottle as well. Thank you so much. Love the product. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-927-9673. 928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.